This is a documentary that is going to be making its way into theaters, I understand, on October 2nd, and it will be coast-to-coast here before you know it. The gentleman who was the director of the documentary, it's a really, really interesting story. He covered LeBron and his high school teammates in Akron in 2002-2003, that vaunted senior season for the team. Chris Bellman, documentary filmmaker, and it is a pleasure to bring him onto the show. Chris, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Really interesting to have you on with everything that you're doing with this movie. Talk about how it came together. I've done some reading. I've done some research on this. Break it down for the people, if you would, as far as what the process was, how you had to gain the trust of the coach and everybody moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just thinking back to it, it was quite the journey. I mean, I started this thing about 7.5 years ago, so it's kind of crazy to reflect on it now. But it originally started out as my class project. I was I'm born and raised from Akron, but I was going to Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, and I signed up for an introduction to documentary filmmaking class, and the requirement for that semester was a 10-minute film, a documentary. So I decided to go back to my hometown of Akron to film. You know, originally I just wanted to do something set in Akron. A lot of people in L.A. and my classmates were really giving me a hard time for being from Ohio and being from the Midwest, and I kind of wanted to go back to my hometown and vindicate where I was from and, you know, kind of show my classmates there was more to the Midwest than milking cows and raising barns. So it kind of originally started as a self-defense mechanism, and in my research I came across the fact that, you know, not only LeBron James and these guys were they phenomenal basketball players, but several of them had played together before going to high school. And, you know, knowing Akron and the area like I did, I thought that was pretty interesting that, you know, these four boys from the inner city decided to go to a predominantly white, positive, white private school. I thought that was an interesting decision that wasn't an obvious one. And I felt like that would, you know, be the subject of my 10-minute film. So that's kind of how it started about 7.5 years ago.
It's unbelievable that you were there for that moment in history, because it's something that's just been talked about so much, and people have looked back on it, and there was the Sports Illustrated cover and everything else. What's really, really interesting, you never know where we're going to get commonalities on this program. Sometimes we get them in the strangest of ways. We did an interview a couple months ago with another documentary filmmaker, Sasha Gervaisi, who did the Anvil documentary that's been out this year on the story of Anvil and their attempted comeback. And he talked about when he actually toured with them as a roadie, and he described it as being a lot like the Cameron Crowe character in Almost Famous. And I read this thing in the LA Times where you're talking about that you sort of had the same experience when you were making this movie, sort of being that character, being there with the team and just watching everything that went on.
Yeah, I've used that exact same metaphor. I've referenced myself as William from Almost Famous, so I'm not sure which one of us should be quoting the other one, but it sounds like we had a similar experience, you know, as these boys became basically rock stars on this tour, and we were crisscrossing the country playing this nationally ranked schedule. That's exactly what it was like. I mean, you know, their tickets were being scalped, and the team needed to add security guards, and it was kind of amazing from my point of view, because the same security guards that were blocking out Fox Sports and blocking out ESPN cameras were grabbing me and pulling me into the locker room, because I had kind of earned this trust and this position as the unofficial member of the team. So it's kind of it was really a whirlwind, and it just kept getting crazier and crazier as the year went on.
Well, one of our partners at FDH, the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Cervillo, the gentleman who did the great job of booking you here tonight, he has seen the movie. He raves about it. He loved it. I have not gotten to see it yet. I don't know all the details that are in it. I'm just curious, because I was there the night of the nationally televised game at the Convocation Center, ESPN2, the big one there, when they were playing Oak Hill. Me and a bunch of my boys were there at the game, you know, just circus atmosphere. Was that one of the things that you were at over the course of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. That game, that was a pivotal game for the boys. You know, it was kind of their first, it was like the litmus test for how that season was going to go. It was the first big game, and that was kind of the pillar they had to jump upon to, you know, let the nation know that this was not the same team that kind of blew it the year before. So, that was one of the most phenomenal games of the season, and it's one we feature in the film.
Two things really stand out to me about that game. One was the best play that he made all night, in my estimation. He was outside the three-point circle and made a perfect threading the needle pass all the way across to a teammate outside the three-point circle at the other edge of the half court there. It was unbelievable. You know, hardly anybody would have the vision to be able to. I think it was out of a double team, no less. I mean, it was that. And I also remember one of my friends saying to me on the way home that night, he was actually more impressed with one of the other guys on the team. I don't remember which one. But I just said to him at the time, I said, that's the gift of LeBron. I said the fact that he can make everybody else look as good as they do. Not that the other kids on that team weren't talented, but doesn't that speak, Chris, to his level of ability to raise the game of everybody around him?
Absolutely, and I think that's that intangible quality that so many stars don't have that gives LeBron the edge. I mean, he really does make his teammates better, and you know, as the film kind of explores, those are beliefs and philosophies he started developing as a kid, as he really found, you know, brothers and family in these friends he started playing the game with. So I think he realized at an early age that foundation is everything. The people you surround yourself with on and off the court are going to dictate the success you have. And LeBron's, you know, it just speaks to his maturity and sophistication that he relates that those off-the-court lessons and takes them onto the court, and it's made him a much better basketball player because of it.
Something that's really interesting, too, I mean, there's something, I don't know how big of a misnomer it is. It was one to me, at least, because it was the impression that I had and probably a bunch of other people had about the notion of, you know, so-called five musketeers on this team. And one of the things Steve said to me after he watched the screener version of this was the fact that you really had, as you've referred to already in our interview here tonight, the four kids that grew up together that were tight. It basically was a four and one situation as opposed to five guys who were all like brothers.
Well, you know, the film really explores that aspect of it, and originally it was four guys, and the fifth character, Romeo Travis, transferred in their sophomore year, and as the film shows, he was the outsider, and he wasn't accepted right away, and he wasn't working real hard to become accepted. A lot of his philosophies and the way he grew up were very contradictory to the way those boys were. You know, they were more than friends, they were brothers, and they shared everything. Everything they had was the property of every one of them, and that's not the philosophy he originally had. And, you know, those lessons that he brought, it kind of caught up to the team and ended up hurting them as a team. But, you know, as the journey of any young man, as these boys become men, he really learned that lesson and became a part of the Fab Five. They originally called themselves the Fab Four, but going into that senior season, they did. They let Romeo be a part of it. He wanted to be a part of something bigger than basketball, and you know, they together became one of the best teams to ever play the game. So I think it was a remarkable off the court life lesson that showed metaphorically through the game of basketball.
Exactly, and it was the almost the perfect combination of somebody with his ability meshing with kids that did have a lot of ability in their own right, and some of whom would go on to play some more basketball past high school, and you know, you being there at the really the dawn of the LeBron phenomenon, capturing this, you know, at the time of the SI cover, you know, or just dealing with the aftermath of the SI cover, the nationally televised game, of course, in the years to come, we all know what's happened with LeBron at the pro level. The LeBron interest has only continued to explode. A good friend of ours has got a website, thelebrometer.com, that is one of a lot of ones out there that are measuring everything that's been happening with the kid and reporting on it. And you, meanwhile, have been in the process, while this has been happening, as LeBron's fame has grown even more exponential at the pro level, of continuing this process, finishing the movie, putting things together. Talk about the aftermath of when you were shooting it and everything you've been through on this journey to the final release date.
Oh, I mean, you know, that's one of the things people ask me right away is why is this film coming out, you know, 7.5 years later? It was an arduous journey. I graduated from college in 2004 with this project, and I knew during their senior season that this was going to be something much bigger than a 10-minute project. I felt like the things they were doing warranted the big screen. I really felt like the journey was inspirational, and it was just as important off the court as on the court, so I knew I had to get that done. Making that jump from a student filmmaker to a real filmmaker was quite difficult, and mostly just because it was hard to find the right resources and people to support the vision I always had, which was not about LeBron. You know, everyone I met with how financiers and producers and everyone out in Hollywood were interested in the LeBron aspect of it. And they wanted to either buy the footage off of me or pay me to direct the LeBron version of the movie. But when you see the film, you'll realize it's more Coach Drew's story than anybody's. It's about a coach who's a surrogate father figure to five boys. And nobody, you know, I think that was too risky of an idea for a lot of people, and they didn't want a part of that. They wanted the LeBron factor. So it took me several years of taking meetings and developing the story that I always wanted to tell, and finally meeting and raising the financing to get this thing done the right way with professional music and the visual effects that I had always envisioned and all those aspects of it. So honestly, one of the biggest challenges was just getting someone to support that vision. And then, of course, you know, I had to get LeBron back involved. At this point, he's several years into the NBA, and getting in front of LeBron is a much different situation several years in the NBA than it was back when he was in high school. So I kind of had to go through that process and show him that not only could he trust me still and that the vision was the same as it was when I approached them back in high school, but also that I had the talent to back this up with. So I think all those things were going on concurrently, and it provided to be kind of a long two or three-year process. But, you know, I finally got through it, and it took me in theaters this Friday, so I couldn't be more excited.
Well, Chris, this is success that's going to be very, very well deserved for you. You know, when you talk about sticking to your vision and everything that was involved in that, I mean, that's just an aspirational thing for me as a writer and anybody else out there that's in any creative fields to look at what you've done, to see this movie make it. It's a tremendous thing. You're to be congratulated just enormously for getting this thing out there into the theaters. We always love to give our guests a chance to plug. So, Chris, talk about the process here. I understand it's getting released in some areas October 2nd. What's going to be the process of this thing opening across the country?
Yeah, you know, this Friday, October 2nd, it opens in Los Angeles, New York, and the Akron-Cleveland area. I think in Akron-Cleveland, it's going to be in Montrose, the Regal Montrose. It's going to be up at Cedar Lea and a couple theaters in Cleveland, Valley View. So, you know, I encourage as many people, sports fans and non-sports fans, really, to go check it out. I think the one of the biggest surprises we've had is I've screened, and I've had the fortune to screen in other countries. I've screened it in Singapore. I've screened it in London, both countries where basketball is hardly played or recognized, and the response was enormous. You know, women who knew nothing about the sport, guys who knew nothing about the sport, they really gravitated toward these stories of friendships and of surrogate family, and I hope that it'll kind of catch that lightning in a bottle and people can recognize that. So if it does well, and these, you know, it's set to expand on the 16th, 2 weeks from Friday, to I think 24, 25 other cities. And, you know, hopefully if people are going and checking out and really getting behind it and liking what they see and telling friends and doing the whole grassroots thing, we'll be able to expand even more theaters than that. So I definitely appreciate the time for the plug, and hopefully we can get some support out there this weekend.
Excellent. Well, Chris, I'm very excited that being in the flagship city of the Sports Talk Network, Cleveland, Ohio, I'm very excited it's going to be opening right here and I can go see it. I'm really, really looking forward to that. It's going to be tremendous. Chris, you know, we loved having you on. We look forward to catching up with you again at some point here. And as the awards start to roll in for this sucker, we'd love to have you back on.
Oh, I'd love to. Well, we'll do it in person so I can come grab some Mama Sana's pizza. I miss some of the food from the hometown.
Nice. We love to have guests in studio. We don't get to do it that often. Mike Molesky from Cavs.com and Tom Wilson, the Ziggy cartoonist, are the only two guys to have done it. We'd love to add you to the tally here, and we'll catch up with you when you're in town.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Rick.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris. True pleasure to have you on. That was a great coup for Steve Cervillo to be able to book this for us. Very excited about that. Chris Bellman, director of the documentary about the early days of LeBron James and his high school team, More Than a Game.